VGRT Gaming Podcast, episode 449, recorded on December 7th, 2016. 49th edition of the TD Gaming Podcast and a 282nd episode of the Video Game Roundtable. I am Jonah Falcon.
I am TJ Denzer.
I am Scott Dirk.
VGRT Gaming Podcast focuses on game news from around the industry. So, explanation, you're wondering why this is jumping ahead too. Well, we did record an episode, and the episode that I got was filled with a lot of horrible noise. So, and I couldn't get a backup, so I decided just to not inflict it on anybody and just have it as a lost episode, which I'll repost when maybe this coming Christmas, and so that you can hear it then and maybe put it down really low and hear what we're talking about. We had talked about a lot of good stuff, but it wasn't something that had to be out. What we did discuss, though, was the fact that we're going to be doing our own personalized Game of the Year awards. We're not going to announce them this week. We're going to wait until next week. The week before things get complicated, and then we'll probably have our New Year's Day episode. But the other thing is that next episode is going to be episode 450, which is sort of a milestone, I would suppose.
I don't know. I mean, I've been on this for, probably 50 episodes now, right?
50, much more than that, actually. I think you've been on for about 100.
Really?
Yep.
Wow, time flies.
And Scott has been around a little longer. Paul was here since episode 93 of the VGRT Gaming Podcast. So that's over 200 episodes. Around 200 episodes. So, what have you been playing, TJ?
I went back to the world of Skyrim. And it's fun. I haven't played it since Dragonborn DLC came out. So I have... If a lot of it feels fresh to me, but I can put my finger on exactly what I think. I really do like the Elder Scrolls universe a lot more than I like the Fallout universe. And the entire reason behind it is I like the quests in the Fallout universe, and I like the weapons and gear in the Fallout universe a lot more.
Yeah.
But Elder Scrolls universe feels more alive. It feels like the lush environment. Like in Skyrim alone, you'll go from like verdant forest to Icelandic tundra and like just the span of one little trek, and it just feels like really, really way more interesting what you see when you're in there.
Did you ever play Daggerfall?
I have not.
Okay, that spans the entire world of Tamriel. It's funny because, okay, Scott, what are you going to say?
TJ, that I really like the world of Tamriel much better than Fallout. Fallout just feels really depressing, even with all the added colors that they did to Fallout. It still just feels very depressing. And I think there was an article talking about how it's very weird that the people of Fallout didn't really clean up their stuff. Like, there's this diner, and a skeleton is just sitting in the seats while this lady is, you know, selling and trading, and she just has dead skeleton sitting in her, you know, like, why doesn't she clean this up?
Well, it's called the Skeleton Bar for a reason. I'm kidding. Well, hey, look, the game takes place around Halloween, so maybe she just put them back there and say, well, it made nice Halloween decorations.
I guess so, yeah. But anyways, I really do like the life that feels is in Tamriel, and I don't know, I just feel more immersed in that one. I guess I'm more attuned to fantasy settings than sci-fi ones.
I have to say, though, nothing beats in Fallout 3 when you first exit the vault.
Yeah, yeah, no light's supposed to blind you.
And you see, it's a wasteland, but it's not a dull wasteland.
Right.
Right.
I don't know, maybe there's too much stuff in Fallout 4. Maybe it has to be more desolate. Maybe there should be less buildings and less, you know, because in Fallout 3, you could go for miles without actually seeing anything, you know? I mean, you have the rocks and then all that stuff, but cities are very rare. You had Megaton, you had that ship, and that's basically it, wasn't it? It was like that and the ship, and was there another... Was there another,
because I remember when I was playing Fallout 3, I was supposed to go to... I forgot what it was called.
That place with all the trees? I don't know if I... see, that's the thing, is I know about that. Oh, wait, there was also that place you went where the UFO crashed, with all the death claws in it.
Yeah. I mean, my favorite Fallout is always going to be Fallout New Vegas, and that takes place in a desert, so... I mean, it really does make a difference with the content. Like that was Obsidian Entertainment that handled that one, and they're just a masterclass of RPG story and design. And
you know, I have it on Steam, and I haven't completed it yet. As a matter of fact, I don't even know if I've gotten far. I think I get depressed every time I let that stupid dog die. You know, her dog. If you're not good enough, he'll just Leroy Jenkins into monsters and just get itself killed.
And And New Vegas?
Yeah, New Vegas. You know that girl in the very beginning who found you? She says, "Oh, why don't you clear out the..."
Right, yeah.
And she always, that dog always managed to get... Once I managed to not let it get killed, you know. But it's too much of a Leroy Jenkins. Just say, "Leave the dog at home. I'll do it myself. I don't need a dog helping me."
I create a save state. If you're talking about the gecko fight, I create a save state right beforehand and make sure that dog doesn't die. I'll go back in time as many times as I need to make it right.
I think that if that's dog meat, then I think, yeah.
It's not dog meat. About... It's a different dog. It's it's a woman's dog. I forgot the dog's name. It's something like Sprocket or, you know, some doggy name.
Did any of you play the first two Fallout games?
Yes. Yeah. As a matter of fact, I know enough that the guy, that tree guy that you meet in 3 is a character that you interacted with in the first Fallout, mm-hmm. that he's been bonded with the tree so long, you know, it's like, please kill me.
Yep, he's the soul ghoul that you get to talk to in the first one.
Yeah. Please kill me, I don't want to be a tree anymore. And also in the... I don't know if it's the first or second game, or maybe both, in which you get to talk the final bad guy to death, or convince him to commit suicide, or just, you know.
That would be the first game. That's the master.
Yeah. So you have to have a high charisma, though. I love in one of the games, I forgot which one, if you have a really low charisma, all you say is, "Durr, I don't know." The dialogue options reflect how stupid you are.
New Vegas had a thing like that, and it was based on your intelligence. If you had a high intelligence, then you'd have some like eloquent options. But if you had a low intelligence, you would be like conversely brash and like not too many multisyllabic phrases.
How are you going to deal with a nuclear bomb? I'll just kick it.
Let's see. But.
Anyways, getting back to your experience with Skyrim, I'm shocked that you didn't wait till it came out on the Switch. How dare you?
Well, but there's no guarantees getting the Switch.
Well, they keep on advertising it on the Switch. They better, or else there's going to be a major revolt.
I'm not buying the Switch for Skyrim if I'm going to get it. That's just...
How low the resolution do you think Skyrim's going to be on the Switch, just so I can play it?
I don't know.
I think they're only going to make it so that it fits that small screen. Because why would anybody want to play it on their TV if they have the Switch? You know, they have the assumption, well, you're going to want to go outside... I hope it runs on
batteries.
Well,
it should be able to switch between the mobile and the TV. That's the point.
Yeah, but the TV version will look like crap. Or maybe it auto reduces its size. God, you know, that battery life. Well, it's probably going to be an hour or two if you play Skyrim on it. Maybe less.
Yeah.
Anyways, getting back to Skyrim and TJ getting back into it. You know, I'm...
Yeah.
Go ahead. Sorry.
I never did a mage character before. I usually always... I did a warrior, and I did a thief, and then I stopped after a while. because I had played the holy hell out of that game. So I'm learning. I'm going. That's another fun thing that is going through all the magic of that game, and just learning all the schools. I gleaned it before, but I had never like gotten deep into all the spells that you can learn in that game, and it's really fun. I had never taken the opportunity to do any of the dual casting, any of the mixtures, and that's a really enjoyable thing too. They really did nail all the effects and part, like, on all of it. I really enjoy it. I really enjoy throwing a fireball at someone and then flipping over to lightning and just becoming Emperor Palpatine on some dude.
So Dishonored 2, come on. you were geeking over that game for the better part of 2016.
Yeah. Wait, which one?
Dishonored 2.
The only reason I'm not geeking over Dishonored 2 right now is because I don't have it.
Yeah, that's just it. You know, you made it sound like it was going to be a day one purchase for me, and you still haven't played it.
I haven't. Because I have so many other things to play right now, and I didn't get it for review. So, it's going to be on my list. But it's just something that I have to work my way through other things first. Don't get me wrong, I'm going to play that game, and when I do, I'm going to talk about it a lot.
Well, maybe if you say, I'm only going to play it on PC, you'll have to wait until, like, next June before it's bug-free.
I don't know if it'll ever be.
That's about the truth.
Well, let me put it this way. It won't be Batman Arkham Knight level buggy. Because there's a lot of complaints about the bugs in the PC/Steam version. That's just annoying the hell out of people. You know, you'd think Microsoft say, hey, guess what? It works perfectly on Windows 10.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, you know, that'd be interesting if they ever made it Xbox Anywhere, Dishonored 2. So, hey, it plays just as good as the Xbox One version because you're playing the Xbox One version. Which is foreshadowing one of the news items that we're going to be talking about later.
Yeah.
How about you, Scott?
What have I been playing? I've been playing more Owlboy, actually. I got that a few days ago when GOG had a winter sale, and I decided to get it. And, yeah, I've been enjoying it. It's a nice... It does feel like a retro classic game from, like, the SNES era or something, and has really nice music. And I didn't realize it was going to start so dark, because usually when they have this tutorial phase of a game, you succeed at it. You do the commands, and you're like, oh, okay, that's it. But in the beginning, you're screwing up left, right, and center. And your little sensei guy is like, oh, you suck. Oh, my God. And he's like, he just gets so disappointed in you. And then the whole thing ends with you just seeing this, like, dark nightmare. And you're just like, your village is burning down. And you're like, that's how terrible you are. You can't even save these people.
Yeah, there's actually a point where he's like, go ask the rest of the citizens and have them mm-hmm. tell you how much you're awful.
Yeah. It's like, man, that's dark.
Well, at least in Fable, you got to beat up people before they thought you were an idiot.
but that's what makes it great, is that you, like, Otis is a true underdog. You start out at the bottom of the barrel and,
Don't mention that name to anybody who's played Dead Rising.
Who, Otis?
Dead Rising.
Yeah. God, Otis.
Oh, no.
Did they bring Otis back? Shut up. I'm in the middle of attacking zombies. Stop telling about this stuff and stop bitching about me when I have to disconnect because a zombie just chomped on my egg on my leg. It's not rude. It's that I got eaten by a zombie.
Oh, yeah. Otis is the worst. Otis is a worse mechanic than the bathrooms.
I wonder if he's in Dead Rising 4. And if so, can you kill him or feed him to the zombies?
That'd be nice.
Yeah. So, yeah, so Owlboy, so you're drinking TJ's Kool-Aid on that.
Lord, I just can't. We enjoy some more games, and I'm joking. Really like a good one, and I'm enjoying it.
I'm joking. I haven't played it yet, but I've seen Universal good reviews for it, so.
You'll play it someday, Jonah, and then you'll understand.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I'm too busy playing Animation Throwdown. And you know, I keep on getting, you know, I keep on getting the cards I don't want. I don't need Absinthe. I want Bender, damn it. You know, I don't want Peggy from King of the Hill. I want Bender. But Bender's a legendary character, and the one legendary character I got was Absinthe, and then another one was for friggin' Party. I said, no, I want Bender, damn it. They should allow you to pick the legendary character you want if you're going to get a legendary character. Oh, well. Anyways, what else have you been playing, Scott?
I'm going to play Minecraft and some Civ. Okay. Those are usual staples.
Hey, I finally got... Now, here's my one complaint about Civ. It doesn't quite explain the space race thing well enough. Because I won with a score victory, even though I was trying to do the science victory, and then I realized you have to go down all the way down to those optional missions to build parts. And, you know, it doesn't tell you where they are. You know, I thought it was going to be under the normal build options. Nope. It's not. It's also not a tech, because I'll tell you something. I just keep on getting social media and the other one, globalization. Those are the last two things that you can do, and everything else is future tech. And I finally saw, oh, go to the mission is this all the way down here. You know,
It's like it's community projects. Which was it like that in Civ 5? I don't think it was.
Civ 4 was a little bit obscure of what you had to do, but then you realized what you were supposed to do. And Civ, because I know in Civ 4 you actually had to start building the parts in the city. So that's what I assumed that you had to do, right?
Yeah, each city could build a part, and then you add it to your ship. And but Civ 5, you also have cities building them, but you have to move it to your capital.
Right. And in this case, it's a community project, and I did not realize it was a community project. So, the only time I ever use the community projects is if, I don't want to do that because it's gonna have a high upkeep, and I really don't have anything else, so I'll just do a community project and get some extra gold or whatever. You know, so next, I'm doing a new game, and this time I'm doing it with the aim because I shut off culture victory and I shut off the score victory, and now I'm just either domination or science, and that's it. Or turn off the culture victory. Culture victory is too easy for me because my turtling often, especially if I conquer another civ, you know, that just accelerates the culture victory.
Yeah, it seems like they went from like where culture victory was
hard.
Was ridiculously hard, if not impossible, for a victory to the easiest thing in the whole game for most of the civilizations.
It's funny, you know, in Civ 4 it was the easiest thing for culture, then 5 they made it harder, now it's, again, easy.
Civ 5 was it was easy, actually. All you had to do was collect your artifacts, and you build
wonders.
There's a couple wonders, and a couple, there's something that doubles it at various points. I know Brazil has a natural doubling when they do Golden Age, for instance.
Oh, in my last game, exactly. I actually finally built a national park. Woohoo!
Right, but
it's like you build a bunch of world wonders in your capital, and then you build a hotel in it, and then you get like 200 tourists from that alone.
Right, but what I'm talking about is I'm talking about vanilla Civilization V. A lot of that stuff, particularly Brazil and tourism, didn't come along until Brave New World.
Right. Okay.
But I finally built a national park, which is hard as hell to do, because A, you have to have a natural wonder near you and build a city near one, and then you can't touch the tiles above it and below it or whatever, you know, so that it remains pristine. And then once you build the national park, then you build all your neighborhoods around it.
You better, have high appeal, too.
Yeah, and I also got the wonder that adds an appeal, an amenity to an appeal to every space in the entire city. So I had an appeal of +8. +8. And normally the max is +6, you know, naturally. So got bumped up twice to +8. That was one rich neighborhood, I'm going to tell you right now. That was like, we live near a waterfall and a natural beauty and on the beach. Yeah. That's where the 1% live in my continent, or at least that's what it was. So yeah. I've been playing Civ 6. I've also I just got notice that the final part of Batman Telltale series is going to be on December 13th, and I'm hoping to living hell that it's a positive ending, because if you're going to go through a dark, dark, dark game, at least I want the ending to be triumphant.
Without spoiling anything, is that Firefly on the advertisement?
For what?
Batman? For the final episode.
I don't know. Oh, look, that reminds me, Telltale also announced Guardians of the Galaxy.
Yeah, that looks good.
Well, all I saw was a teaser. But
I'm interested to explore a Guardians of the Galaxy universe told by Telltale.
Yeah, it's how much you want to bet it's going to be released in concert with the Guardians of the Galaxy 2?
I would almost count on it.
And it's funny, Telltale is now the go-to people for people with licensed properties that they say, hey, pimp up our project, our property. Because now, they're getting amazing, Batman, Guardians of the Galaxy, The Walking Dead.
I don't know, I've been thinking, I haven't played this yet, the Dragon Quest Builders, but from what I've read about it, it seems like to me that that's what Minecraft Story Mode should have been. Because in the Dragon Quest Builders, you're basically the hero after in the first game, you can accept the Dark Lord's proposal to side with him, and he destroys the world.
Are we talking about Dragon Quest, or are you talking about Tyranny?
Dragon Quest.
Yeah.
Tyranny is something else.
I'm teasing. It's a joke.
But, so basically, he destroys the world, and you're reborn, and you have to rebuild the world. And
wow.
You're doing that, going location to location, going to quests, and rebuilding each place. And I feel like that really should have been more the Minecraft story mode kind of game where you're actually building, not just hitting the Q button until the game builds it for you, but actually dictating where stuff goes and, having a hand in recreating the world. I think that's what Minecraft story mode should have been.
League of Dimensions, you actually have to build the object when you place it on the thing. There's three different ways. There's going to be Lego World, which everybody says is going to be a Minecraft killer.
I don't think they could kill Minecraft.
Well, here's the thing. It's Lego. It's the original Minecraft. It's the original real-life Minecraft. so we'll see. Here's the thing. The Lego MMO was really, really good, but no one played it, unfortunately.
Yeah, wasn't there another Lego game that came out where they were exploring the world and you would find builds, but you weren't really building. You were just finding, you would find a house and it would build it for you and say, okay, here's a house. And it was not really, you weren't creating. You were just finding a build and it didn't really seem like the kind of game that would kill Minecraft anymore.
Imagine if you had a Minecraft MMO, in which you had a larger, in which it was basically your Minecraft server, but it was linked to everybody else's, so that you'd just keep walking, and then you'd walk into someone else's server and, see what they've done.
That would be crazy. I think there are very large servers out there. Maybe not as big as, a World of Warcraft, but still have, a lot of people on some of them. I think there was, a really infamous one out there somewhere where they have, a couple hundred people on there. They have some big servers.
One of the news items today was that they had an Atari VCS emulator in Minecraft. Yeah, you could play Atari 2600 games in your Minecraft world.
Oh, yeah. They did calculators and clocks and all sorts of crazy stuff in Minecraft.
Yeah.
So, there was something I wanted to talk about, and I've completely forgot about it. Oh, well. So, we're going to move on to the first item. Assassin's Creed 3 goes... what am I saying? Oh, yeah, that's right. I did say it right. Assassin's Creed 3 goes free, murders Ubisoft servers in the process. And this comes from some PC Gamer. The final piece in Ubisoft's 30th anniversary giveaway puzzle, Assassin's Creed 3, is now free for everyone. You can grab it from the Ubisoft Club, but be aware that you might need to wait before jumping in. Apparently, there's an awful lot of people who want the game, and going by the chatter on the Ubisoft support Twitter account, the servers are struggling to keep up with the demand. The good news is that AC3 will be free for a month, which takes us well into January, so if you can't get it today, there's always tomorrow or the day after, sometime next week. Hey, it's been out for 4 years now. A couple of days won't kill you. However, the owners of Assassin's Creed 4 Black Flag have been experiencing a separate but apparently related problem. After claiming their free copy of AC3, Black Flag just simply disappeared from their accounts. Exactly why this happened isn't clear, and people have recently begun reporting that the game has reappeared, so it seems Ubisoft is on the top of the solution.
As soon as I read this story, I logged on to Ubisoft and claimed my free Assassin's Creed 3. You don't even have to download it, you just claim it.
Assassin's Creed 3 is the bastard child of the series. It's the game that everybody says is where it jumped the shark a little bit, you know, before redeeming itself. I think a little bit with Assassin's Creed 4. It's the one set in the American Revolution, for those who remember. And it had a story that angered everybody. Simply because you found out, oh no, oh my god, should I spoil? Yeah, it's 4 years old. You're actually working with the Templars. You're actually one of the bad guys, or at least your father is one of the bad guys in the beginning, you know, and it has you wondering if the assassins are all that great. Of course, they're called assassins.
Yeah, well, did they really think they were the good guy?
Well, yeah. I mean, well, for one thing, the actual assassins came from the Hashashin, in which they would they would get these unsuspecting schlubs, show them, you know, paradise, which is basically virgins and milk and honey and all that stuff, and have them do a lot of drugs, hash, which is where you get Hashashin from, and they would say, go kill this guy in broad public, and then let yourself get killed, and when you do that, you'll go to heaven. So that's how the assassins were. You know, you'd assassinate someone, then everybody would kill you, and then you'd go to heaven.
Yay.
And then, to your shock, you found out you went to the other place. So, but, you know, I have it for the Xbox 360. I think it's actually backwards compatible, if I want to put it on my Xbox One. Yeah, but free is free. But I find it odd that you would lose Black Flag if when you claimed it.
That's a weird glitch, but I'm glad they're on top of it. If the games have reappeared, it just... I don't know why that would do that. That doesn't really make sense.
Clearly, the solution is to just give everyone a free copy of Black Flag.
Yeah, don't laugh. That's probably going to happen next year. Because here's the thing, is that they took a year off from Assassin's Creed, right? I mean, they just did those platformer. One of them, which was free on Xbox Live Gold, and I could see why they weren't exactly liked. They were basically ripoffs of Mark of the Ninja. And Mark of the Ninja did it much better. The action. As a matter of fact, I have it on Steam. I bought it on Steam when it was only $2, because I love the Xbox 360 version. And I'm wondering if it's backwards compatible on the Xbox One. Probably not yet, but you never know. So you're about to say, TJ.
Assassin's Creed 3 is the one that I hear people talk about the least. Like, I heard people talk about Black Flag a lot, and I heard people, and I mean, I've talked about it, and I've heard other people talk about Assassin's Creed 2 and even Revelations, because those were the... Assassin's Creed 2 was like the one where it came into its own and became an iconic product, and then the spin-offs are where they started working out multiplayer. But I never hear anyone say anything good or bad about Assassin's Creed 3.
There's mostly bad about it, only because it's just, well, as you said, forgettable, and that there's a lot of stuff in it. You see, it's an intermediary between what they were aiming for in 2 and 4. You know, I think it's sort of like Wag the Dog, in which while they were waiting for Sphere to be ready, they just shot a film called Wag the Dog. Barry Levinson, I mean, and, you know... later Assassin's Creed 2 games just irritated everybody because they tried to include tower defense, and it just did not work. It was the most irritating part of that game. So, you know, I still prefer, shockingly to myself, Assassin's Creed 1.
Which Assassin's Creed is the one that's going to be in, I guess, Japan or China?
Oh, those are the side scrollers. I said they were the ripoffs of Mark of the Ninja. It was in China and in Russia. Assassin's Creed Russia, Assassin's Creed China.
The rumor is that the Assassin's Creed, I guess 5, would be either in Egypt or Japan. There's been concept art for both.
Wanted an outer space. Assassin's Creed Outer Space Edition. Assassin's Creed Mars.
Assassin's Creed Infinite Warfare.
you know, Assassin's Creed Mars and the final apple is in Mons Vernera or something like that. I don't know. Or Mons Olympus, actually. That would be. Well, keep in mind, spoiler for a game that's 10 years old or 9 years old, actually. You're working for aliens who pretended to be gods.
Wait, which game are you talking about?
Assassin's Creed.
Oh.
So the gold. I can never pronounce that damn
the
word.
The gold
so
from
hard.
Stargate.
Yeah, Stargate. They were aliens that pretended to be gods.
Egyptian gods, yeah. No, these guys pretended to be Greek gods. Athena, I believe, is the alien that talks to you. Was it Athena or the other one? No, it was Athena. Anyways, they're gods that talk. And that was the best part, by the way, of one of the Assassin's Creed 2s. I think it was the first Assassin's Creed 2 in which Athena spoke to Ezio, but she wasn't speaking to Ezio. She was speaking to Desmond, which was cool as hell. Do you remember that part in which Ezio doesn't know what the fuck she's talking about? She said, you're talking to me, but you're talking at me, but not to me. And she says, no, I'm talking to the person who's inside you right now. I'm talking to Desmond. That was, and I remember Desmond said what everybody was thinking, what the fuck? That was his last word. Was that the last words of that or Revelations? But I will say this. My major goal in the first Assassin's Creed was to get Altair's armor for Ezio.
Yeah.
That was worth going into the sewers and doing those stupid puzzles. So anyways, we're going to move on. Speaking of classics, we're going to move on to the next item. Go ahead, TJ.
After Blizzard shutdown, Legacy World of Warcraft server returns this month from Ars Technica. After their unofficial Legacy World of Warcraft server was shut down by Blizzard, and after tiring of waiting for Blizzard to launch an official Legacy server support, the fan community behind the popular Nostalrius server is now organizing behind a spiritual successor. The new unofficial server, dubbed Elysium, that doesn't sound good, is set to launch later this month with the same vanilla PvP and PvE experience found in the classic version 1.12 of World of Warcraft circa 2006. Back in April, Blizzard forced the shutdown of the 800,000-user-strong Nostalrius server, citing legal issues with allowing such unofficial servers to recreate how World of Warcraft existed a decade ago, before numerous expansions. But by May, after 250,000 people signed an online petition urging them to reconsider, Blizzard agreed to meet with the voluntary Nostalrius team to discuss the possibility of official support for legacy World of Warcraft servers. In deference to that planned meeting, the Nostalrius team halted plans to release its source code publicly so new fan-run servers could flourish. After that June meeting, the Nostalrius team seemed optimistic that Blizzard was making a good-faith effort to address its concerns. Since June, though, Blizzard has been publicly silent on the issue, and the Nostalrius team says it has received no response to repeated questions and offers of help. Blizzard has yet to respond to a request for comment on the matter from Ars Technica. When November's BlizzCon came and went without any hint of progress on legacy server support, Blizzard said it has instead laser-focused on the launch of Legion and getting patch 7.1 returned to Karazhan ready to go. The Nostalrius team decided it had waited long enough. Thus, the Nostalrius source code and existing player information is being transferred to the Elysium project, another legacy server group that already has many members of the Nostalrius team working on it. Quote, "We all share a single bond that unites us, a love for World of Warcraft,
a love for vanilla World of Warcraft,
Elysium states on its About Us page. After a couple of stress tests over the last few weeks attracted thousands of players, Elysium announced this week that it is ready to launch publicly on December 19th. Players will be able to revive accounts from the now-defunct Nostalrius server or start over anew in Elysium's world. Nearly 8 months after the Nostalrius shutdown, Elysium's launch could increase the pressure on Blizzard to kickstart the official legacy World of Warcraft support it has long been considering, or it could simply lead to more legal threats and forced shutdowns.
Yeah. Now, I will tell you that circa 2006 of World of Warcraft was the highlight for me as well when playing that MMO. And I haven't returned to it yet, but I hear that many people aren't really satisfied with the real streamlining they did of all the stats. I mean, you can understand why they did that, because everybody was doing the same stats that they read on fantasy boards, do this, 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 and this for this character and all that stuff, you know. But a lot of people don't like the big salt flats being flooded, I guess.
Yeah. And, like, I understand Blizzard's stance on this. A, going back and, like, working with that stuff again after they've moved so far forward from it would be sort of jarring on a certain level, and they would have to dedicate a lot of man hours to it. And B, allowing other people to do it is sort of like saying, well, anyone can just take our games and make whatever they want with them, which is sort of what the modding community is about, but at the same time,
800,000 users, dude. I mean, Blizzard has to see the money there.
Yeah.
Like, you know?
And if there's people that are willing to do this for free, why not take advantage of it?
Yeah, why not take advantage of it? I mean, you have 800,000 users. Their population is, what, 7 million now? So that's like you'd be adding 12 to 13% more subscribers who say, you know what? Okay, World of Warcraft, it isn't fine, but we played a game 8 years ago, or 10 years ago, that we really enjoyed and we want to have it again. And the thing is that a lot of stuff is about retro, you know? And I think 10 years is a long enough time that it can seem like, yeah, it's retro, blah, blah, blah. Let them have the original graphics for all we care, you know, and just have one server that's for vanilla, unmodified, back-to-basics World of Warcraft. You know, I mean, they have servers which are strictly PvE, you know, which there's absolutely no PvP, and Horde and Alliance go on picnic trips together. You know, they just freely go.
Fun.
Yeah, I mean, there are people who prefer those PvE servers, which is absolutely no PvP, and everybody's friendly with each other. And everything is all about attacking the environment, you know? And that's fine. There are people who enjoy that, you know?
Yeah.
And there are also some servers that are strictly PvP, in which no PvP flag, everything's PvP flag 24/7, and, you know, if you get killed by some a-hole from the Horde because you're too low, well, guess what? That's your lookout. You know, yeah. There's people who enjoy that, and they also enjoy
this
it.
Also relates to the whole abandonware issues where, like, you know, this is a version of a game that the company had abandoned and moved on from, so it is nice to see this kind of thing preserved. And I mean, it is a gray area, you know. You don't want to feel like an entitled person, but on the other hand, you don't want this to disappear and nobody in future generations being allowed to play it or experience it. It just would seem like a shame.
You know, the original EverQuest still exists, and it has, what, 29 expansions now or something like that since it first launched?
Yeah.
And that's one of the things that I think they made a big mistake with, because one of the World of Warcraft expansions, was it Shattered Islands or something Shattered, right? World of Warcraft, jeez. Anyway, what it did was, instead of doing a World of Warcraft 2, they instead decided, you know what, we're going to have our World of Warcraft 2, but we're just going to update the entire game, right?
Yeah, that was Cataclysm.
Cataclysm, right. And the thing is that while I know that the thinking behind that is that we have 14 million subscribers, we don't want to split them, you know? But what it has done is that, as you can see, people got more and more bored, you know, because you don't have a 2 in front of it. And then, you know, people who didn't want to go to EverQuest 2 remain on EverQuest, and, you know, they're happy, and EverQuest 2 people are happy, and that's fine.
Mm-hmm.
You know? And you could also, there was a long article on GameStooge, and actually, I posted it on the GameStooge Podbean site. I should provide a link for it. And it talked about Ultima 10. Ultima 10 Ascension, which was to be an MMO, and it actually was before World of Warcraft came out, and it was absolutely amazing looking, But the reason why it didn't come out was EA was afraid, oh no, if we have another MMO, people will stop playing Ultima Online and we'll split our subscriber base. What a tragedy! You know? And they still have Ultima Online. That's fine, but look how tiny it is, you know? They killed a perfectly good game, which, by the way, was also the last... I think Richard Garriott was actually working on that game. Which is a shame, because, you know, if you ever wanted to see what it might have been like...
Didn't he kickstart a new Ultima thing, I thought?
He has Shroud of the Avatar, which is still in beta. I have the copy. I've only played a few times in it. It's underwhelming, but then again, it's a beta, you know. So it'll be interesting to see what happens. I've met Richard Garriott. It was the only time I really was awed by somebody. I mean, I even met Sid Meier, and I wasn't awed by him. Sid Meier's cool, though. he's very, 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 very shy. I mean, his son Brian is the one who interacts with most of the people, which is fine. I don't even know if he still works on games anymore. I think they just farm out to people like Bill Sorensen and Ed. Oh, by the way, I'm friends with Ed Soren. I'm friends with Bill and Soren, who made number 4 and number 5 respectively. I guess now I have to make friends with Ed Beach.
Yeah, Ed Beach seems cool.
So, anyways, I, to tell you the truth is, I wouldn't mind going back to World of Warcraft 2006, to tell you the truth. I mean, I would rather play that than the current World of Warcraft, even though I never made a panda character with their Kung Fu Panda, what's it called?
I was tempted by the Worgen. I liked the idea of the werewolf character.
I had a Worgen character. It was actually okay. What happens is that when you go into battle, you have the option of turning into a werewolf.
Mm-hmm. I like it. Yeah.
And I will tell you this, on GameStage, there were so many people who were upset that the Worgen were not a Horde species.
Yeah, the Horde got goblins.
But the thing is, I would have rather had the goblins
than... they should become Horde. I still don't really get why the Tauren are Horde, but, you know...
The Tauren are the... Well, here's the thing. About the Worgen, it actually makes perfect sense that they're their alliance, if you know the backstory, right? Because there are alliance people who are turned into werewolves. The goblins make sense that they would be more towards the Horde, you know?
But the goblins have always been towards the Horde.
Yeah, but, you know, the goblins generally were friends with both the alliance and the Horde. I would have preferred to have goblins who were alliance than Horde. Let the Horde have the Worgen, you know? I mean, the thing about the Horde is that they're so close to the burning Legion, you know? I mean, when you're undead, you're that close to being the bad guys, and you're still experimenting on humans. There's always a turn-off to me.
I see the Worgen as being more closer to nature as well, so I think they would go alliance.
Yeah, I mean, if I were to be Horde, I'd probably prefer to be Tauren, simply because they're nice and shamanistic and one with nature, and they're not really bad guys. The orcs have some really nasty dudes, even if they're on the good side.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I still haven't seen Warcraft yet, and I probably will at some point. I mean, it's Duncan Jones, come on. he made Moon, and you know, I think Warcraft is a movie that was specifically made for the fans, and it'll have all its sequels as made for DVD and or made by Sci-Fi Network.
Yeah, Siffy.
Yeah. Anyways, we're gonna move on to the next item. Go ahead, Scott.
All right. Halo 5 Forge Custom Game Browser is launching on PC this week. This is from PC Gamer. When Halo 5 Forge launched for PC earlier this year, it kind of felt like PC players were expected to create map content for the Xbox One community rather than enjoy the multiplayer component for themselves. That's going to change this week with the long promised custom game browser launching on December 8th. As part of a massive new update to the Xbox version of the game called Monitor's Bounty, PC players will get full access to Arena and Forge modes. There's no matchmaking, but the custom browser you'll be able to match easily enough or simply create your own. We know getting a full a full fire team
together to run customs isn't always easy. And while looking for a group is great for appointment gaming, sometimes you just want to jump in and discover something new. UX design lead Vincent Huey said the new custom games browser enables you to search for in-progress games from the main menu. Meanwhile, the content browser lets you browse the matches to suit your taste. Here are
Line because it's we don't have any shots. So.
Yeah, we don't. Sorry. Yeah, we're a podcast, so you couldn't see them anyway. Yeah. When Forge first hit the Windows Store back in August, West predicted that once the custom game browser launched, Halo 5 on PC would explode. Whether that proves the case or not, the F2P is good news for anyone desperate for Halo MP on PC, and that's clearly a lot of people.
Yeah, remember when you actually had to browse a server list to get into a game? But yeah, I mean, now this is one way of a soft release of Halo 5 multiplayer for PC gamers.
I think my favorite days of Halo multiplayer was heading over to my friend's house, getting a big group together with four Xboxes and playing a four-player split screen on four different TVs in the house in a local area connection.
That's awesome. I wish I had friends to do that with.
Remember LAN parties?
Yeah.
I did that. That was fun, too. I don't...
Hey, but did you ever play CivNet?
No, I didn't get to play that.
Oh,
no.
Okay. I haven't played Halo 5 in a dog's age. I might jump in sometime. But, you know, at some point... I'm pretty sure with the Xbox Anywhere thing with between Xbox One and Windows 10, they already have Halo 1, 2, 3, and everything else on Xbox One. It should be really easy to release that on Windows 10.
Hmm.
Yeah, it's a strange thing when you have all these Xbox games. You think they would easily translate to the PC computer. It just seems strange to me, the whole... I don't know. I guess
rec packs are now an accepted part of the game. You know, no one's bitching about them anymore. You know, can you imagine how much money Microsoft would make if they just ported wholesale Halo 5 multiplayer to PC and said, here you go, have fun.
Yeah.
You know, and you can earn rec packs or you can buy them. It's up to you. I just wish, you know, they had this thing early in Halo 5's life in which, hey, you bought this soda, guess what, it came with a rec pack. Hey, you got this from Taco Bell, you get a rec pack. You know? It doesn't have to be great rec packs, it's just like, hey, you did something in real life that's going to get you a rec pack in Halo 5. I don't know. I'm hoping Halo 6 doesn't come for a while, although it's probably going to be announced next E3 and come out in 2018. How about... So... Let me ask you a question. Did you play Halo 5 multiplayer, TJ?
I did not. The last Halo I played was Halo Reach.
Oh, okay. Oh, Halo Reach, you know, firefight. And they still don't have real firefight on Halo 5. Because
I really loved Reach. Reach was like it was a great sequel, and B, it was like they expanded the multiplayer with those roles. That was the one where you got combat abilities, and I thought that was a really good way of changing up the regular formula and giving like each player their own sort of style for it.
You know, I haven't tried multiplayer. I mean, I've done firefight on the Xbox One on my Halo Reach. I haven't tried multiplayer Hellfire. I'm going to try and invite somebody next time I do that. The one thing I love to do is Gruntpocalypse, in which they're all coming at you, including little tiny grunts with fuel rod cannons. Those are the worst.
Yeah.
Those are the worst, because not only do you have these green missiles being shot at you, but the people holding them are little tiny things that you can barely see. It's like, oh, yeah. It's like ants wielding a mortar, you know? It's like, where do I hit? And it's really fun, especially if you play on the hardest levels so that they're all tough. And it sort of becomes like a zombie apocalypse because all these little things are coming after you, and you have to hide. You actively have to hide from them. And you can hear them looking for you.
Mm-hmm.
So, how about you, Scott? Did you play any Halo?
I've never played Halo.
Wow. Well, fortunately, you have the big pack which has Halo 1, 2, 3, and 4. If you ever decide to do it.
I'd have to get an Xbox first.
Well, like I said, that's why at some point they're going to have to release it on... You know, here's the funny thing, is that Russians are playing Halo 3 multiplayer now. Which is weird. Mm-hmm. They're playing it on Steam. They had a special for Russian players only, Halo 3 multiplayer. So, at some point, they're going to have to do it. They're going to have to release it on PC. Come on. What is Microsoft waiting for? They can print money. You know, Gearbox did the first Halo port, which was the first Halo, and it was okay, but they could have done so much better. You know, Halo 2 was a great game on PC. It was really good. As a matter of fact, I think they're still playing Halo 2 multiplayer on it.
Yeah, Halo 2 was the one I had LAN parties with, and those were some good days. I really enjoyed get a match with just energy swords going, and it's just chaos.
Oh no! Oh. Better yet, you get the tiny little ship. The ship, I forgot the name of it, but you know you're inside a Covenant ship that's really really tiny, swords only. That is just organized chaos.
Yeah.
And the thing is, I always win at that too. Anyways, we're gonna move on to the next item. A report. Nintendo Switch will get some GameCube games, and this comes from Kotaku. Nintendo will bring the GameCube games, including Super Smash Bros. Melee and Luigi's Mansion, to the Switch via Virtual Console, Eurogamer reports today, citing anonymous sources. The report by Tom Phillips notes that those two games, along with Super Mario Sunshine, are already scheduled for Nintendo's new system. Phillips also cites Animal Crossing as a game that's slated for Switch's Virtual Console, which is reportedly being manned by Nintendo European Research and Development, the studio behind the Mini NES. In 2012, Nintendo of America president Reggie Fils-Aimé hinted that the GameCube games could show up on the Wii U's Virtual Console, but that never materialized. So, Scott, this is your article. Why don't you jump right in?
I'm hoping that this will be a sign of things to come, that we'll get more games that are backwards compatible on Switch.
This is not backwards compatibility. This is just releasing old games on the, you know. I mean, backwards compatibility would mean you take the GameCube game, you slide it into the Switch, and it's running.
Yeah,
or GameCube, those tiny little discs.
A Virtual Console, but I mean, they would release more Virtual Console games. I don't know what their library is. I mean, nobody knows until it's released. And I think that's something that Nintendo should have done a long time ago, is like, if you've had a Wii account and you get a Switch, that the library would transfer over whatever you've bought on the Wii, but I don't think they're going to do that.
Not when they can sell it to you again.
Yeah, exactly. So they'll probably make us buy it again.
You know, game needs to be on the Wii U and the Switch. Eternal Darkness.
Yeah.
Otherwise known as the Mindfuck game.
Is that the one where you set traps?
No, that's the one in which the game will pretend your console's malfunctioning, that you lost the sound, or your when you go crazy, things start happening. That's more meta. You know, the game will tell you that it's deleting the save file.
Yeah, it was a game in which it's a horror game in which your character like slowly loses their mind, and there's different sanity effects, quote unquote, that happen throughout the game that go from everything that Jonah is talking about to like in game like terrifying things that occur. It's really meant to just mess with you, and it was a pretty good little experiment in video game.
You know, it's actually worth it just to pay, what, $20 for a GameCube and $5 for Eternal Darkness?
Yeah. As for the possibility of a GameCube virtual console, if you want to know how they're going to roll that out, I mean, you could look at the way they're rolling out. They're just now rolling out Super Nintendo games on the 3DS virtual console. It's been slow. It's been very slow. And there are things that, like, I don't know what halts the process. I guess it's just redesigning it so that the UI fits a 3DS or a Wii U. But also just like things that either that they came out in Japan, but they don't come out. They come out in separate markets. Like the North American market doesn't get what the Japan market always gets.
I was just talking about Super Mario: The Lost Levels, which was actually Super Mario Brothers 2 in Japan.
They just put out the Ogre Battle, one of the Ogre Battle Super Nintendo games in Japan, and I'm like, why am I not playing that right now? Why is that not on my 3DS? What is wrong with you?
That is why. that's why everybody wants no region, region free games, so that they can just order it directly from Japan and just select the
Nintendo is notorious for this because they never released Bahamut Lagoon or Terranigma over in the U.S., and those are two games that I would have played the heck out of as a child and would have bought, and I had to play it on emulator to play it at all.
Yeah, and I think that's going to be what we're going to be looking at with the GameCube thing. I'm optimistic. I would love to play GameCube games on the Switch if I could. If I had some classics to go back to as I was playing new stuff, I always like that.
And also but bring them with you in portable.
But there's a lot of history to look at where they've like it's been a trickle of a release period for this old stuff on new systems.
It's like I just don't get it. They would make a lot of money if they would just release these classics on there. I mean, I would love to play Final Fantasy IV on my 3DS, but they have I don't know, maybe they've lost the right to do that. Then never mind.
Yeah. Does Square own Final Fantasy? Oh, by the way, total tangent here. Shockingly, Final Fantasy 15 is getting good reviews, chiefly because of the combat. The combat, they say, is really, really good.
I don't know. I read the line, and your sports car broke down, and I just lost all interest. No thanks.
Yeah, but you know what? It might be worth a look.
Yeah, I mean, for others, but not for me. No.
We can watch
Less
Play videos.
Nintendo is capable of releasing Square Enix games games like Final Fantasy because Ogre Battle is a Square Enix game.
Okay. Yeah, I think Nintendo is bitchy at Square Enix for a reason. Was it I forgot. Oh no, Nintendo's really bitchy about Capcom because of the Capcom 5. Nintendo will go out of its way to ignore Capcom games, which is why you won't see Mega Man in Super Smash Brothers.
Although, interestingly enough, North America, like this was just today, Demon's Crest, which is a Capcom game, just came to the 3DS for console.
Yeah, but that's different. We're talking about Nintendo properties. Bayonetta's in that's Konami. By the way, Bayonetta is now backwards compatible, which means I'm going to have to start playing the hell out of it on my Xbox One.
Nice.
That is. Give you an example of how good Bayonetta is. It's the only Xbox 360 game ever to get a perfect 40 from Famitsu.
Nice.
40 out of 40. Hmm. Yeah. And I love Bayonetta. She's like the Varla of our age. Talk to the fist. Oh, all you people, talkative types. Let's fight. I feel like I'm a fucking celebrity in this town. Anyways, so yeah, Eternal Darkness. So yeah, do you still have a GameCube, Scott?
No, I do not.
Okay, so if you ever get a GameCube, or you know someone with a GameCube, pick up Eternal Darkness for $5 from GameStop and just enjoy that game. That's the one game that even hardcore PC gamers who have they say that's the game they want, a console game they want on the PC. I mean, I'm sorry, Metal Gear tried it once with what's his face, the psychic one, who told you what save games you have on your console.
Yeah,
but yeah, I like games that really totally screw with your head by, like in Batman Arkham Asylum. Remember, press the middle button to avoid Joker firing his gun at you.
Yeah, there is no Eternal Darkness is on a ROM, so that's downloadable.
Okay. Well, yeah, we'll download it. It's going to lose something from playing on a PC because there's a lot of console-specific things about it. But, you know.
Yeah.
Fish and mailed. Anyways, so have you guys been writing up your awards
I had a couple.
Don't say it because it's going to be spoiler. How about you, Scott?
I haven't written anything. I forgot about it. So I'll have to write something.
Well, that's why we have another week to do it. Just all you have to do is look at the games you bought in 2016 and just figure out what you liked or didn't like about them and just make up awards for them. Mm-hmm. I'm pretty sure that Batman Arkham Knight on PC is going to get an award of some sort. Anyways, so look for our show notes at GamingPodcast.net, along with industry news and our gaming history article. If you enjoy your feedback, leave us comments on our blog at GamingPodcast.net. Also, hit us up at Facebook.com/GamingPodcast. Subscribe to us on iTunes and leave us some iTunes comments. I am Jonah Falcon, at Jonah Falcon.
I am TJ Denzer, at Johnny Chugs.
I am Alpha Shard, at Alpha Shard.
And we will see you next week for what will probably... It'll be the next to last episode of the year, because we'll have two podcasts. The last one will be on the 21st, and then we're going to be taking a break for the Christmas/New Year's vacation, and then we'll be back on January 4th, where we will have our first podcast of the year, and we'll probably talk about what we're looking forward to for 2017. This year's gone by fast.
Yeah, it has.
Yeah. And, you know, the most irritating things is that there haven't been really any big games that have been, or even little games, you know? There haven't been many games this year that have really stood out. I mean, yeah, you can talk about Owlboy all you want, you know, and that's fine. But I'm just talking about as a whole, this game has been a dog. This year has been a dog.
Well, we got Civ 6. I still think that's a good game.
Yeah, but one or two games does not make a year make, you know? I mean, 2000 sucked because all it had was Diablo and Deus Ex. I must admit. Yeah, it had and Thief 2.
I mean, okay, you want to talk about years. 2015 had Witcher 3, Metal Gear Solid 5.
Halo there was, 5.
2015 was a great year. So going off of that, yeah, I can see exactly what you're talking about.
2007 was probably the best year we had in 20 years.
Did Fallout 4 come out
last year? That was 2015.
That was last year.
Yeah.
Okay.
2007 had BioShock. It had a bunch of. It had Batman Arkham Asylum.
2016 had a lot of things for me to complain about.
There's a lot of things to complain about with 2016.
Oh yeah.
There's already a joke about let's forget about that. Let's pretend 2016 didn't happen.
It was no man's year.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
We don't speak of 2016.
We don't talk about 2016 around these parts.
Yeah.
Especially since you know who got elected. So anyway.
Take that history book and just light it on fire.
At least the 2016 section.
Anyways, we will see you next week.
Happy gaming, everyone.
Take care, y'all.